You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
And we're back with another episode of the Underdog Dynasty Podcast, AAC edition. My name is Dan Morrison. That is Emily Van Buskirk. How are you doing today, Emily?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm tired. I'm in Massachusetts now.
You're home for the holidays.
Yeah, and I'm tired and cold.
Yeah, I bet it's cold. I've heard it's crazy.
Yeah, so for this weekend, Friday night, Friday's supposed to be actually pretty warm for the time of year around here. It's going to be in the upper 40s, lower 50s and raining all day.
Oh,
and then that Arctic blast is going to hit overnight, and it's going to drop like 40 degrees overnight.
Yikes.
Stay down. So it's going to be cold, 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 cold-ass Christmas.
That's fun.
Yeah. Sorry, we can't all live in the Bay Area.
No, it's, to be fair, like, it is very cold here, more so than usual, so.
Well, I came from Orlando, and it's, like, 50 degrees in Orlando right now, which is colder than it's used to.
Yeah, everyone's having, like, a lot colder this time of year right now, so.
It's countrywide right now.
You know what else is cold? When your team fires you after 17 years for no reason.
Okay, nice transition, Nice. Yeah, we already talked last episode about the Kennedy and Matulolo fire.
Still upset.
Navy made a hire. They promoted Brian Newberry to head coach from BC. And I want to put this politely because I think Brian Newberry is a really good defensive mind, and I like him. I like him.
Mm-hmm.
What's the point of firing him if you're going to promote the defense coordinator? If you're saying, hey, this staff has issues or we need to move on, why are you promoting from within? This is not when you fire a coach the way you did, you're saying this is no longer successful, but then you sign up for more of it.
I think this is a very specific message that he was saying that Niumatalolo was the problem, which I can't even fathom. That cannot be right.
I think that Gladchuk and Niumatalolo had a power struggle, especially over the Ivan Jasper thing. And I think I think no matter what happened this season, he was going to fire him just to prove that he was the one in charge. And I think it's a short-sighted, petty move.
Yeah. This is like when parents are arguing over custody in court for the kids. And, like, this is not good for them. It's not good for anybody.
I do want to emphasize, I like Brian Newberry. I think he's...
Yeah, he's being used as a pawn, though, in all of this.
And I'm not
because it's not about him.
I'm not saying he should have taken the job either, because of course
you're going to take it. Yeah, I don't fault him for that.
I don't see how this fixes anything. You know what I mean? And I heard people saying right after the fire, they're going to get a Paul Johnson disciple. It's going to be good. It's going to be the triple still, but it's going to be good again. I'm like, Kenny Matulolo was a Paul Johnson guy. Like, what are you going to get on? I'm very curious to see who he hires on the offensive side of the ball to run it.
Yeah.
Because
we've already seen him hire the defensive coordinator. Well, not hire, again, promote from within. You know, linebackers coach PJ Volker move up into the defensive coordinator position. And I'm not mad at that either.
No,
because you look at...
Because that's a guy
coached under him. He gets it. And I have to give Newberry credit for this. You know, the get six mentality that Navy had is definitely, you know... It's from him. And I think it was a good thing he instituted. He told his defense if they could get a combination of 6-3 and outs, fourth down stops, turnovers, defensive touchdowns, blah, 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 that they would win. And that was proven, you know? And so we're not sitting here saying this is a bad idea, but the way that this is all unfolded is inexcusable for a place like Navy. It's just not how they should be doing business. It's not how they should be showing the team that they do business.
It's too petty.
So petty.
I don't even want to say it's SEC because SEC is a little bit different, but it's that same kind of infighting for no reason.
Yeah. And it's like any other school, I'm for that. Like, I love pettiness, all about it. But at a place that's representing our country, that's defending our country, that's teaching young men like the things that they need to do in the battlefield, pettiness is not one of those things. So it's kind of disgusting. And I'm a little bit upset about it. But
and we'll see what they do decide to go on off. You know, Army just made a transition on the offense side of the ball.
They did.
Guys who know the triple who are going to be available. You know,
that's another one I'm upset about, because Brent Davis, offensive coordinator at Army, really good guy. And
I got not, it. I also didn't get it there. Like, the offense was not very good this year.
But I don't think that was his fault. Like, and they win the Navy game. And
yeah, well, there's ebbs and flows when you, for any college team, but especially at the academies, for like what type of player you have. And like, this was definitely a down year for the talent at Army offensively.
Right.
But they've been good in recent years on the offensive side of the ball too. So I didn't 100%. I think that was a short side one. But what my understanding is Jeff Munkin doesn't want to be at Army forever. This is not his end goal.
And that does not surprise me.
And I think that he probably is trying to like push for that sooner than later to go find
I don't know if you say Power Five, right? Like. No.
I'm thinking like the type of school that would be willing to go for a traditional triple guy. Like, his name came up a lot when Kansas opened before they hired Leipold.
Mm-hmm.
Leipold. You know what I mean? I like if Georgia Tech this cycle decided to go back, like I said, all right, tried to break from the triple, didn't work, you know. So they're out there. But I mean, also more realistically, you say, I don't want to fire Mike Bloomington on you, but a Rice type job where, like, you know, there's limitations and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I could see that. It's just a lot of disappointing stuff from the service academies right now. Not happy about it, but
And again, I think
Brian. I think it's indicative of the state of unrest in college football in general.
So. I think it's in the AAC especially. You're seeing like this kind of panic as the conference turns over.
It's right, and there's a jockeying for who's going to be at this top, you know. And I know your team; you want to be there. It's a chance for anybody to kind of set the tone and be that top team. But this is not how you do it. I don't.
No, I think they made a mistake this year. But why did Tulsa move on from Philip Montgomery this year? Like, I know the results weren't there, and I was fine with the move.
That one makes more sense, though, to me.
But you make it this year because, there's a lot that makes more sense. But, like,
right.
You make it this year instead of last year or next year because this is the transition year. You're like, okay, why did North Texas fire Luttrell? Because they thought that next, we don't need to relitigate that whole thing. Yeah. Why did they do it? I think they did because they think they maxed out their potential under him, and going into a new conference, they wanted to, like, see if they could do more. And again, that's another one where I was like, I don't really get the firing. I especially didn't get the timing, but I like the fire there. So, like, I don't know. We'll see how it all works out in the end.
We really will. Speaking of making mistakes in the conference, we had two bowl games that we could talk about.
0-2
in the AAC. Saturday, we had two games, and Dan's going to start us off with which one.
Want to do the Fenway Bowl first? How about?
Yeah, I figured you would want to do the Wasabi Fenway Bowl.
Which, by the way, when they say wasabi, they do not mean the condiment. I'm just saying, it's like it's like a tech company.
It's tech, yeah.
Yeah, that was Louisville 24, Cincinnati 7. If I'm not mistaken,
you're right. 24-7. That's an 8-5 Louisville defeating a 9-4 Cincinnati. Who just didn't show up.
Yeah. So this whole year I talked a lot about, I thought Ben Bryant was a very limited quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that, you know, you knew he has floors fine, but like he isn't ever going to get you above a certain point.
And
it was frustrating to me that Cincinnati kept going back to the well on him, because I was like, you've got this really highly talented kid in Evan Prater. I want to see what he could do. Now, I've seen two games of what he can do, and I get it. I apologize.
Yeah.
Prater, I'm not saying that Prater will never be good. I'm saying he clearly wasn't ready this season.
Right.
He had to play because of Ben Bryant's injury. The game is too fast for him right now. And that was just so obvious in this
game. I just think there's zero excuse to put up 127 yards. I think there's just no...
No, well, they should be running for that. They really should. But like,
insane.
And I know the circumstances were really funky in this, with both head coaches for both teams being gone.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of starters for both teams being gone, Like,
but that's making a terrible case. Cunningham
didn't play either. You know,
right? Like, this is making a bad case that Luke Fickell was Cincinnati. Is that what we're saying? Is that he really was Cincinnati and there is not a Cincinnati without him?
That's not 100% what I want to say just yet, though.
But it looks like it. It's starting to look like that.
What if I was a Cincinnati fan? And the thing is, bowl games, I really try to put a grain of salt to. Like, yeah. It's just not, they're not a great sample in reality of like how good teams actually are because of numerous, like, again, because both teams are on interim coaches. Maybe Kerry Combs is just a bad head coach and Dayon Branch is like,
it's the same guys that Fickell had. It's the same, mm-hmm. I'm assuming, Gabe.
A lot of transfers for both teams opted out of the game. Things like that are like that was a big factor. This was, I can't remember which head coach said it, but described it as like a backup versus backup game. This is whose second string was better. But at the same time,
well, then that speaks to recruiting. So then they're just not out there recruiting.
Well, no,
or developing.
Cincinnati's been very good about both those things in recent years. I don't know. I think part of it was the quarterback wasn't ready to be out there. I really do. I think that's a huge part of it. I think that I think the offensive line got whipped. I don't think I know that. The offensive line had a bad day. I think that the defense was pretty good. They forced four turnovers.
It doesn't make any sense to me if I'm looking at the stat line and you're looking at Louisville giving up the ball four times and yet Cincinnati scores 7 points. They score one time.
That's insane. Yeah, no, this was not a bad defensive performance from Cincinnati. It was a horrific offensive performance,
though. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It was cold and, you know, whatever. Same weather conditions for each team. No excuse there, but.
I was also right in my pick.
Yeah, this was the only bowl game that we differed on because otherwise we took AAC across the board. So you're right about that.
Yes.
I went AAC. Or just have loyalty, but anyway.
I understand. I just really didn't think they were going to win, but I also did not think it was going to be that bad. So,
yeah.
There you go.
The other bowl game we had was the New Mexico Bowl, which was BYU 24, SMU 23.
Like, literally, I could not hate a game more than this game. Like, going in, I was like, you know, what's funny is I was in the Bahamas. We had just gotten back from our swimming with the pigs, you know, excursion, and we're sitting in the hotel room, and this game is on. So, I'm making... You know, Kim and my friend Elena watch it. They don't care at all. And I barely care. But I'm like, it's on and, you know, I'm resting. So I'm like, I'll just turn it on. But I was like sitting there. I was like, I don't think I could hate a matchup more than the scene SMU play BYU. It was just like a nightmare of a game. And then the first half was just awful. Mm-hmm. I couldn't watch the second half.
I had been driving for 12 hours at that point. I stopped at a hotel in Virginia, and by the time we got settled on, I put the game on. It was about halftime. SMU had the ball, and the very first play I saw was a bubble screen that Tanner Mordecai threw for a pick six. And that's the kind of game it really was just sloppy, ugly.
Yeah. I think you knew when SMU started out with a field goal as their first score. I think that to me was like, okay, this is not.
I wasn't like overly impressed by BYU in any respect either.
No.
But I mean, SMU's defense wasn't bad, but their offense disappeared.
What is going on with AAC team? Both Cincinnati and SMU have pretty potent offenses.
Yeah. I mean, bowl season's weird.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know.
Don't you want to win your bowl games, though? Like, you get bonuses for winning them if you're a coach. So I think, like,
coaches definitely do. But I mean, it's such a weird, I think a lot of coaches are still adjusting to what this time of year is now with it. We gotta think tomorrow, we're recording this on Tuesday. Tomorrow is the early signing period. The transfer portal is off the walls right now. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of roster building stuff and off the field stuff right now that coaches are like, it's more important than winning your bowl game because getting your roster right for next season and going and winning 10 games in the regular season is it is more important than winning the New Mexico.
Well, I agree with you, but
getting transfers and getting that signing class right this year is so much more important than beating BYU in this game. It is.
This is what people are going to remember, though, until we see them play next year. And this is what you're going to look back on.
Knacked in a few bowl games, though, and he ended up with a Power 5 job. So, like,
I'm not saying that it's detrimental, but it's not good. You know, it's not good to end your season this way. I will give a shout out to Tyler Levine, the running back from SMU. He actually had a very, like, better game than we would think because the passing was so bad. He was able to carry the ball 23 times, 91 yards, and one touchdown. Not super stellar numbers, but was impressive in the plays that he did get in on. So,
and that, I just want to, before we wrap up, I want to talk about that final sequence of plays at the end of the game. So they score a touchdown to make it 24-23 with like 8 seconds left. And they choose to go for two instead of playing for overtime, which I am all for, because no one needed more of that game at that point.
No. You know
what I mean? Go win it or lose it in regulation. I'm all for that. The play call they made for their two-point conversion was the dumbest two-point conversion play I have ever seen. I watched it several times. Best I can tell, it was a run-pass option where the pass option was a bubble screen behind the line of scrimmage on a two-point play that was covered. The run option was a quarterback draw, which was also covered because they didn't have numbers in the box. So when they took away the bubble screen, Tanner Mordecai had no chance but to run into a crowded, like a box where he didn't have numbers, and he got stuffed. And he's not that good of – he's not like an atrocious runner, but he's not that good of a runner. You don't think of him as a runner first, you know?
Yeah.
And why are you not designing a play where – if I'm fine with it being an RPO, but why does it not give to the halfback and then have someone like one or two routes in the end zone to throw to? Why is the whole thing playing – like you need to go 3 yards. Why are you doing this behind the line of scrimmage? That makes sense. Play call was atrocious. Decision was good. Play call was atrocious.
The worst case scenario in that situation. So
just like
it was tough. I'm you know, hats off to everybody that watched the whole game and made it through. You guys are the real MVPs if you did that. So speaking of other AAC bowl games, we are going to continue our theme of having just phenomenal guests on this Underdog Dynasty AAC podcast. And yes, it is another Tulane player, okay? Because they're in the biggest bowl game of the conference. They're playing USC in the Cotton Bowl on New Year's Eve, which is about to be the most epic showdown, I think. I'm very excited for it. I'll be out there. This guy is going to be out there too, so stay tuned. We're about to get on the horn with one of the Tulane players who's going to talk about how the Green Wave is going to attack USC offensively and what the game plan is to beat this Pac-12 powerhouse. So stick around. All right. Thank you guys for sticking around. We have a special treat for you. Yet another Tulane football player joining the Underdog Dynasty AAC podcast. Another first as well. We love breaking these guys in. We love having them on and having them share their stories with you. So without ado, I'd like to officially welcome Tulane tight end Tyreek James to the Underdog Dynasty podcast. Welcome to the show.
How y'all doing?
We are doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Feeling good? Living good?
Yes, ma'am. All day.
It's hard not to in New Orleans, honestly.
It's very hard. If you have a bad day in New Orleans, it's...
Something's wrong with you.
Something wrong with that person.
Whose fault is it, really?
And that's kind of what I want to ask you as my first question. As I was reading some of your stuff and through your bio, and one of the things that you mentioned as a selling point in New Orleans, and we're going to get to how you got to Tulane in a second, but they said that food is something that you really enjoy about that area. So coming from Texas, you know, where food is pretty king, barbecue is on point, you know, lots of good food. What is the food in New Orleans that you found that you really love?
Cajun food. Really, honestly, when I was in Texas, I really never really adventured outside of Tex-Mex and barbecue and soul food, things like that, because, I mean, growing up, that's basically all I had. And then my dad's wife, my stepmom, she's Mexican, so I'm getting the Mexican side of food. So it's just, I haven't really ventured out. So, my first time, I really haven't had seafood bowls or crab bowls or anything like that. Anything Cajun, never had before.
And you like
besides,
it now?
But besides jambalaya, out the box, but I don't like that.
Out the box. I didn't even know. I didn't know you could do that.
You get a little box of jambalaya.
I had not known that. I learned something new. Have you had any of the, and I never say this right, po-boys?
Po-boys?
Boy,
boys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
it's a place called Bears. It has, I get a shrimp boy.
Okay, Everybody says the shrimp is the best one.
Shrimp's a good one. Shrimp's, yeah, shrimp's the way to go. Some people will go like roast beef or.
What?
Yeah.
I thought it was only seafood for them.
No, you can chicken, yep, and all that.
Okay.
Fried shrimp is the way to go. We come to us, get a fried shrimp. Oh, boy.
That's good to know. Well, I know there's a place nearby. Your fellow teammate, you know, Will Wallace, and fellow tight end, he lives across the street from, there's like a diner, and I always say it wrong because I call it by its name. It's like someplace that has the freeze or something. Yes, the Frost Up. And so I call.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I'm currently at Will Wallace's house, and I'm currently across the street from Frost Up.
I walk from there to the Frost Up all the time, and they have really good food, probably some of the best burgers. And my friend Kim, she tried one of the po' boys there, and it was amazing. So shout out Frost Up, but do not call it by its given name, which is like Tim's, or I don't know what it, I said it that way and it's everybody, like, made fun of me.
It's like people call it Ted's.
Yeah.
People call it Ted's, Pro Stop, Frost Up. It all depends on how you say it.
Yeah.
I said it wrong and got ridiculed. So everybody beware. But anyways, all right, well, let's dive into some football. Dan, you want to kick it off?
Well, yeah, I was actually going to start. You mentioned that you're from Texas, so I was Julian's going to the Cotton Bowl. I was wondering what your relationship is with that bowl game. When did you first know about it growing up? What does it mean to you?
I really haven't known about the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah.
But I've known since the new AT&T Stadium has come into play, since they went to Dallas, like once they moved from Irving to Arlington.
Mm-hmm.
I've known of, like, the Big 12 Championship. That's about the only, like, big college football game that I know that gets played at the AT&T Stadium. But the Cotton Bowl, this is, like, other than, like...
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming to college and like seeing the New York Six Bowl, before that, I never really knew anything about the Cotton Bowl.
Okay. Well, I mean, you're getting to experience it now to play in it. So that's going to be better than any memory you could have had. Are you going to have a lot of family that come out to this?
Oh, yes.
like everybody?
Family, friends, you name it. I do not exaggerate when I say my whole family, not just like the James family, but like people that, like, our whole, like, we can have a family reunion. So all my family from Memphis, all my family from, well, most of my family originated in Wheeling, Arkansas. So all my family from Memphis, Arkansas, Texarkana, they're like, look.
Texarkana.
Tyreek's playing the Cotton Bowl. Like, everybody, let's get the tickets. We got a family reunion at the Cotton Bowl. We haven't had a family reunion in since before COVID.
All right.
So everybody wants
James
to get
family reunion. Okay.
What does the James family tailgate look like? What are you doing for that?
Those guys, off the wall. They off the wall. When everybody gets around each other, it's just one. It's like two peas in the pot. Everybody's clicking off each other, and everybody's just having a good time.
That's awesome. We can't wait. Well, I'm going to be there, so I'm going to have to go out and find them and see, you know, what it's all about. I'll bring some drinks out there and see what's going on. But let's jump into a little bit about how everybody we talk to that ends up at Tulane has a unique story about how they got there. But it always ends the same. You know, it's this incredible experience. They fall in love with the school when they see it. And the team this year especially is so special. So how did you find your way to Tulane in New Orleans? And what made you stay and have this great experience?
So my story is probably different than everybody else's. But
okay.
So Coach Fritz was in high school. I was coached by this guy named Mark Bell. And he has a son named Sean and Brian Bell. Well, Sean's the oldest, and he was like in Magnolia, Texas. And he coached out there. And I want to say probably my junior year, well, my sophomore year, he came back. He was a GA at Georgia Southern, but then he came back to China Spring, where I play high school at. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And Coach Bell coached Brian Bell at Sam Houston. He was like my head coach, like my OC at the time, Brian. He led Sam Houston to a national championship with Coach Fritz. Uh-huh. And
okay, so he knew
it. Coach Roos at the time, Coach Doug Roos, he was the OC. And so my coach, he just knew basically all the background of Coach Fritz and everything like that. And so the thing, when the offense that we were running in high school,
mm-hmm.
it just so inconsistently, like they ran the same offense here at Tulane. And I was such a big factor in high school in my offense, because I played quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end. Play all those. I was successful in all the positions. I was just like, shoot, this offense is the same offense that I'm running here in high school. I might as well go to it in college. So that's how I found Tulane. Because Coach B came to me. He's like, yeah, you got an offer from Tulane. I was like, what is that? Where is that? I don't know who that is. I don't know what that is. I don't know where it's at. I started doing research. I was like, oh, it's New Orleans. So when it came time down to it, I was like, oh. Most guys want to stay in Texas. Like,
right.
Texas football is so big. So I was like, man, I told my mom, I was like, I don't want to leave Texas. Like, I don't want to leave. Because both of my older brothers played college ball. And, like, they stayed in Texas. But I was like, and they got to be home, like, close to my mom. I was like, I'm the only one like that. They got to go far. I don't want to leave Texas. So my mama was like, "No, you're leaving Texas. Get away."
Did your mom like? Did she like Tulane? Was she in favor? Like, yes. Because it's an academic school and all that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She loved it, and so she was just like, "You get a chance to get a great education, mm-hmm. and you actually get the chance to grow up on your own and see problems for yourself and like." Just be able to grow up and like not rely on me so much.
Yeah.
So that's how I found Tulane. And I'm here now.
It's a good ending to a story. But it's not over yet, but the Tulane chapter, we're starting to come to a close. You mentioned that you played all these positions in high school. How did you end up as a tight end in the Tulane offense?
Because I started out as a tight end in high school. Like,
okay.
That was my only position.
Okay.
And then it just so happened, like, some guys went down in high school, and it was like, I think I've always been the guy to, like, learn so many things. Mm-hmm. So, like, wait, that way, like, if I'm needed, like, I can, like, they just fit me in.
Right.
And the next position I went to was our Z receiver, our outside receiver. And I had my sophomore year, I had like 7 touchdowns that year. And then my junior year, I played receiver, played tight end, and I played running back a little bit, like our heavy back. Like when we were down the goal line, they was like, oh, he can run.
Mm-hmm.
And my senior year, we didn't have a quarterback. But then,
played quarterback.
I started out playing quarterback, and then we finally I got the guy to come back to play quarterback for us.
Okay, so he came back. Okay.
So I started out, he came back, and then I finished playing all the other positions, tight end, receiver, running back.
If something ever happened to Michael Pratt, could you step in and throw the ball for Tulane?
Yeah. If the coaches would let me, Coach Prince knows I can throw.
Because
at the very least, that's a double pass.
We should see that. Well,
stepping out of retirement, huh?
That would be awesome.
The coaches know I can throw the ball.
Okay. What has it been like to be part of this offense that is very favorable to the tight end, that utilizes the position a lot? You guys have that two tight end set that you run sometimes, and you and Will are such a good complement to each other. You know, you more of the pass catching mobile tight end, him more of the blocking. What is that like to be part of that?
Man, it's awesome. It's fun. It's fun not only getting a lot of praise for being like a big third down threat to other teams, but I know when it's time, people always be like, why you don't be so selfish with getting the ball? Like, my brother has always said, when it's your time, it's your time.
Right.
When it's your time to make the play, you're going to make the play. And I've always been the guy, I've been a very unselfish guy. So, I'd rather me get doubled and my partner on the other side, he can catch the ball and he can get yards.
Would you say that when it's your time, it's your time, that's kind of like the motto of your team, especially this season, because all the guys have stepped up when they need to step up, like Spears and Pratt and you and Will and everybody, even your freshman tight end stepping up when you need to. Would you say that's kind of indicative of who you guys are?
Yes, we always say you're one play away. Mm-hmm. You're one play away from getting in, and just like you had said, the freshman tight end, he knew I had to come out like for a little bit in the championship game,
mm-hmm.
and big third down and seven, I think, and he came in the game where we were eight personnel, so luckily the ball had came to him and he went, yeah. got a first down. We kept on going. Luckily, that drive, we scored.
Yeah, he did step up in a big way.
Yeah, and you mentioned the AAC championship game this year. That's, the first AAC championship for Tulane, the first conference championship you guys have had in a couple decades now. What was that like around campus? What were the emotions? How did people treat you all of a sudden? Is it any different?
Nobody really treated it different, but we didn't take that moment for granted. I can tell you that we definitely lived in that moment for a long time after the game, because after the game we got our hats, like we got our hats that say championship, like champions. And I mean, probably the entire week after we had won the championship, everybody in the locker room is coming back to practice with that hat on. So everybody. A lot of people around was like, God, y'all gonna let that hat? Y'all gonna let that hat go? We was like, no, we're not. I tried to
get one of those hats on the field after the game, and it was like impossible. I was trying to get one, and I couldn't because you guys were holding on to them. Like, that was important, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Those hats are important until they win the Cotton Bowl. Then you got to wear the
Cotton Bowl. And then you got a new hat, yeah.
Nah, I don't think the Cotton Bowl hat going to be better than winning the AAC championship, okay. Because I think that was our motto. After last year, after going 2-10, our motto after the season was, mm-hmm. we're not selling enough for nothing less than a championship, a conference championship. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we made it to a bowl game, but we done made it to three of them already. So we were like, man, we have to make it to this conference championship and we have to win it. Like, there's nothing less. There's nothing under that. We'd rather win the conference championship and have that trophy sitting in our facility.
That trophy went everywhere that night. It didn't just go in the facility. It was in a taxi, it was at the club.
Oh, that night it was all over the place. And I think one of the teammates had slept with the trophy.
Jason had the trophy in his bed. We saw the pictures of it. Yes, it was definitely everywhere. But I think it shows like how important that was to you guys and what that meant to kind of not only win the championship, but be able to beat UCF for the second time at playing them and beating them in the stadium in front of all your fans. Especially that first game was tough. I mean, they had a lot of fans at that first game. They kind of out-yelled a little bit. And so you guys came back so strong. And what was that environment completely different from the first time you guys played them?
Honestly, when we're on that field, we don't. Coach Fritz always tell us we matter what goes on in between those lines. Like,
yeah.
Like, looking up in the stands is nice, but I'm 100% sure all the people that played that night, everybody tuned the fans out.
Yeah. That's fair.
So
I was able to speak with your tight ends coach last week, Coach Slade Nagel, who's awesome. And you know, he's a very good playmaker. He's a good play caller. He's very creative and he thinks in a unique way. And I'm curious what it's been like to have somebody like that as your tight ends coach this year.
Oh, I love Coach Nagel. Coach Nagel's been there since I've gotten here. He teaches me a lot of things. And it's just like not just with football, but all my life. So having that type of guy that not only coaches you are on the field, but he's also gonna give me great advice outside.
What's like a good piece of advice he's giving you off the field? Like dating advice or like school advice?
Probably the best advice that he's given me since I've gotten here, because I wasn't really like on my own per se.
Mm-hmm.
But my mom, she tried to get me into it. But when I first got here, probably the best advice that he's gotten me is know how to manage your time.
Mm-hmm.
Your time on this earth is not. You're only here for a certain amount of time,
right?
And he's like, know how to manage your time, because once this football thing is done, it's like, look, you're gonna have to go into the real world. And then you're really gonna have to manage the time. So it's like just teaching us all these things of not being late or showing up 2 minutes before the meeting starts you're late basically. Because let's say you show two minutes early on a job and you walk in late, you're fired. It's like he always like you're fired he always jokes sometimes. He'd be like, when somebody like comes in late to the meeting, he'd be like, yeah, you would have been fired right there.
You would have been fired. Yeah, exactly.
Or either fired, or like if you're going to the next level, he's like, yeah, you're fine.
You'd be
like,
fine.
If you had money, you'd give me some money right now.
Yes, that is exactly. I'm glad that he prepares you for that next level, because you know this is the time when we're looking to see you maybe make this jump to the NFL and play at the next level. He talked about how you've improved your blocking game. That's something that when you started to now that you've made a huge strides in. What do you think that you would bring to an NFL team as a tight end, especially in a time right now where tight ends are a huge part of the NFL, you know, offense? You got to sell yourself, man. Here we go. What do you got?
Honestly, I've always been the person to let everybody else tell my game. Because I'm such a humble person, and just everybody always be like, well, I'm surprised you're like not cocky and things like that. And like, that's not the type of person I am. So it's just like, I just let everybody else tell my game for me.
Okay. But do you think that blocking is something you've improved on over the years?
But that's something that I've definitely have evolved in, because I haven't really blocked per se like how they do in college. I didn't really do that in high school, but blocking, I definitely had to do that, because we had such a triple option offense, and so I had to block a receiver and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I had a little blocking, but not as much blocking as I've had to do in my 5 years here.
Yeah. That's awesome. Dan, you got anything else?
I'm all set if you're all set, Emily.
I guess I'll ask you one last question. Well, two. One's football. What are you – you guys obviously have been practicing for Cotton Bowl. You've looked at film, I'm sure, of USC. What do you see from their defense as you're looking to match up against them on New Year's?
Oh, those guys are all over the place.
They're pretty big.
Yeah. I mean, everybody says – y'all think it's a mismatch. No, we don't think it's a mismatch. We think we don't have go out there and have some fun. And it was those guys they just really they fly around and they got some good players on the team.
Yeah. So you guys are gonna have to run your routes tight. You're gonna have to hit everything well, not turn the ball over, right? Like these are all things that are being talked about.
Yeah, yes, ma'am. Most definitely having ball security because those guys are like, when I say they be flying around, like they're top of the nation in terms of takeaway margin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so yeah. Coach Freeman and Coach Nagel, and Coach Boulder, they all be like, ball security is at a premium at its all time high, even when nobody's around.
Right. You better sleep with that football. Okay, my last question is a fun one. We just do this all the time with guys. So if you were going to somebody on your team because you had, like, let's say you're going to, you know, the NFL draft and you got a dress, you got a drip nice, who are you going to on the team for fashion advice?
My homeboy. My dog. The other Tyreek Presley.
Okay. Why would you go to him?
So is it anybody on the team or is it like anybody in general that's involved with football?
We'll do the team and then who is there someone else in football that you would go to?
Most definitely. So on the team or on the players, most definitely my homeboy, the other Tyreek on Tulane football.
What about the coaching staff?
Oh my gosh. Coach Hamp and Coach
JJ. Yeah, I knew it was going to be JJ.
those two guys probably have the best. And when we go on a away trip, they be blowing everybody out the water. Like,
yeah.
One time, Coach JJ came in a suit. He came in this nice brownish suit, and he had some Gucci shoes on.
He's always got the Gucci shoes, the belt.
With a Louis belt and a Versace shades, I think.
Yeah.
He just outdressed.
He does it. Okay, so who would you go to in the football world then?
Football world?
Like, is there somebody in the NFL that you see on game day and you're like, oh, that person comes fitted? Like, I would model myself after that?
Probably. Lately, I've been seeing like the style of like Ezekiel, the way he's been dressing lately.
Okay.
He's been dressing real nice. He like casual, but still kind of fancy.
Okay, I dig that. Awesome. Well, we can't wait to see you in the Cotton Bowl. I'll see you out there in Dallas, and I'm going to be looking for the whole James clan. I hope they have T-shirts that they're going to be wearing for this reunion.
They're going to be all over the place because once we had won the championship, my cousin Tristan, he had called me. He was like, "Yep, we're gonna be down there in Dallas." He's like, "We're getting the whole family."
That's awesome.
It's just funny.
It's gonna be a party, and hopefully, we'll have something to celebrate—a Tulane victory. So,
yes, ma'am.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, and we will see you. I'll see you in Dallas.
All right. Thank you.
Bye, Tariq.
Thanks for that.
Wait, hold on 1 second.
All right. That was pretty awesome from Tyreek, I think. But we're not done. We are doing our own little award season kind of jam now, I guess how you'd say it. End of season awards are important, I guess. You know, who's the best player, most, you know, best coach, all that stuff. We've got a few awards we want to give out, but a little bit more casual. We both came up with a few different categories we want to give out. A little bit of an award too for just impressing us this season, but keeping it more light than just repeating. Like, we think the best offensive was also Tajay Spears.
I kind of want to give an award to Tyreek James now, because that was one of the best interviews we've had on here. He was so great.
Yeah, but you know, you
that's not one of our categories. I understand, but well, I think I did do that.
Yeah, you create the you've got best interview. You could do that if you felt like it.
You have to give him an honorable mention there, because that was very, very interesting hearing his take on those things. And I thought the most interesting thing, and I'm sorry, I gotta say this, is that he thinks they were more excited to win that AAC championship than having the Cotton Bowl hat.
That jumped out to me, and yeah. I actually think that's a really good, healthy attitude to have in the modern game. I think this is a very broad brush I'm gonna paint real quick, but I think way too often we become obsessed with the postseason in college football, and specifically the playoff. And I guess this is more of a Power Five issue in general, but like, you know what I mean? You have this rhetoric that the playoff, that's what matters. And that's what devalues bowl games, is when people are told, like, say you're Tennessee this year, and you were told all year, oh, you could make the playoff. That's what really matters most of all. And then you fall short and you're in the Orange Bowl. It makes the Orange Bowl not feel special, which it should feel special. But like, so should conference championships. Those should mean something to be special too, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
I value things that things like that matter, and I like that. I like that. And
yeah, it was neat.
We've got awards to give out, Emily. And I'm going to start us off here real quick. I'm going to take the best uniform award, and I'm going to tell you what. It's so obvious it hurts. It's the UCF Space Game. It always is. Because those uniforms are fun, they have meaning behind them, and they always just look excellent. And they if we're talking space uniforms, they're better than Navy's NASA uniforms.
No way.
Easy. I changed my opinion about halfway through the Army-Navy game. I was like, actually, I don't think these look good in the middle of a game.
Interesting, because in person they looked good.
Halfway through the game, I started to be like, I think armies are better. And then by the end of the game, I was like, yeah, I don't really like navies, I think. I think they look cool, like, bits and pieces. I don't think it looked good as a whole thing.
Interesting.
I mean, if we're doing best uniforms for a team throughout the season, it's obviously Tulane. Everyone knows that.
Okay, well, so you just stole mine. So mine was going to be Tulane's baby blues. Always the best uniform, hands down.
That's like, I mean, depending on the combo they go. I like when they blend the baby blue with the olive green a little bit. I don't need to be pure baby blue, but Tulane obviously has great uniforms just by their nature. I think, you know, I'm giving UCF credit for the space game specifically.
Well, mine was Tulane, so there you go.
Well, this is my least favorite uniform, Emily, was the black and like royal blue uniforms that SMU wore, like the all black things. Hated those. Don't know why. Usually like black uniforms, hated those.
Sometimes they don't translate. Like, the idea of black is nice, but
I think it bothered me that the blue felt like a different shade of blue than what SMU normally wears. And yeah. I like SMU's regular uniform, so I was just like, I don't know, what's the point of this?
When I saw it on the screen, I was like, oh, this is kind of sick. And then I was like, oh, no, it's not. So I feel you on that. All right, what's your next one?
My next one is the most fun game we watched this year. Very simple. Oh. What's the most fun game? Not the best game. Not the most important game. What was the most fun? And the obvious answer for most fun.
Oh my God. You can't say obvious every time.
In my opinion, I added.
Okay, there we go.
SMU 77, Houston 63. Like, it was dumb. It was nonsense. And it was just fun. And I don't think I need to defend that argument, that point.
No, I think that's a fair thing to say. I went ahead and did Army-Navy just because for me, like, that's the most fun experience of a game. Maybe not the most interesting game, but it was historic. We got to see this exciting double overtime, and all the pomp and circumstance is so great. So
glad you chose the exact opposite game of me.
Yeah. Yep. 0 points. Run the ball. None points.
And you know, in all fairness, there's a ton of games that are purely fun. Like, ECU Temple was insanely fun for what it was.
ECU games tend to be fun, whoever they're playing, I feel like, so.
You know, there's just been a ton of really fun games this year in the conference. And I think don't take that for granted.
Right.
The next award that I need to give out is the best coach sideline moment. And this is something you got coached you on the side. Like, last year it would have been Gus Malzahn coaching from crutches and stuff like. This year for me, it's Dana chugging a Red Bull at noon against ECU. that the cameras come just walking back and forth, pacing, chugging Red Bulls. And I thought that was just the silliest, most Dana thing there has ever been. And you know what?
I liked it. Mine is also Dana Holgorsen, but when he told the fans to go F themselves and to shut the F up.
Back. Both are perfect Dana moments.
Yep. Duality of Dana.
Moving on. Then I've got the most electric play of the season.
I bet ours is the same here as well.
Mine's the Alec Holler one-handed.
Yeah, it has to be. It has to be. Mine is too. Has to be the best.
I don't know how you would pick anything else.
Right.
You know, and there was other electric plays. I don't know how you could say any other game was more
electric. In a rivalry game, you know, the way the catch went down, it was incredible.
The point in the game, the fact that UCF needed that to make the conference championship game. And at that point, potentially the Cotton Bowl, if they had beaten Tulane, you know, everything about that was great. And then I had, this is similar to one that you have, but mine was the biggest off-field surprise we saw this season. And for me, it was Fickell leaving Cincinnati. Because the dialogue around Fickell has been that he would only leave Cincinnati for like two jobs, maybe three. It'd be Ohio State, Notre Dame, maybe Penn State. They went to Wisconsin. Not a bad job. Good Big Ten job. But still caught me really off guard.
Interesting. Mine's off-field surprise is not football-oriented, but it was when I found out that Seth Hennigan is an expert ping-pong player, and that's what he likes to do in his spare time as a hobby. So.
Yeah, that is surprising.
I was surprised.
I think it actually makes sense. It's a hand-eye coordination thing that he'd be good at, it, right?
I mean, I think, yes, it does make sense, but it's also, he doesn't strike me. I don't know. It didn't go with the vibe of a, you know, group of five quarterback. Like, I was very surprised to hear that. And I guess he takes it very seriously and his whole family does it. So it's kind of this neat little quirk. So that was my.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool. That was fun.
All right. You get some awards from you.
Yes. So my first one is clearly derived just so that I can give it to one person and one person only. It is the Thick King honor for the AAC, and it obviously goes to Hole Naylors. He is our Thick King. He is the thickest quarterback in the AAC, so he deserves some recognition for that. I'm not sure how you're going to pick somebody else, but okay, you could try.
I'm going to have to step on your toes. I'm going to have to hurt your brand. I'm going to fullback, Dabo Fofana.
Okay, Dabo Fofana, I'm here for that.
Had a great year as the Navy fullback. Fun to watch, great power up the middle. You know what? There's your Thick King.
He's too young, but I think give him another year or two and he might give people a run for his money, for sure.
Okay.
I like it. All right, the next one is best interview. And obviously after today, I want to say Tyreek James because he was incredible. But prior to this, I actually put Alec Holler because I thought his interview on our podcast was really interesting, how he told us his story, being a walk-on and how Gus knew his name and then put him into the system. And he had this incredible year. So I thought that was a really good interview.
I tried to avoid our podcast story. I was trying to think of something. Oh. I ended up, no, it was fine. I think I misinterpreted your note.
His best interview you saw.
Yeah, that's what I went with. And I went back to the Dana Holgorsen well after they beat UTSA, talking about drinking vodka and Red Bull. And again, just the Dana Holgorsen brand this season has been truly, truly ridiculous.
Yeah. Pretty much any Dana Holgorsen interview is going to be
good. That's all I ever want from his is just nonsense and offense.
Never change, Dana.
Yeah.
All right. Most shocking conference news. And for me, that was the firing of Ken Niumatalolo. Had to be the most shocking thing that I saw.
Yeah. The way that went down was really shocking to me.
We knew he might be in the hot seat, but the way that they did it, especially right after the Army game, like that, no.
Yeah. For me, I went with, I kind of cheated and went with something from the offseason, which is that just realignment's happening now, not 2 or 3 years from now. The news that, you know, the three teams are leaving after this season and the six are coming in happened over the summer. So. I used that.
That was surprising when it happened. I like that. Feels so long ago. So my second to last category here is most surprising performance in the AAC this year. And I had to give it to Temple quarterback EJ Warner for coming in as a freshman, taking over for Dwan Mathis after he just like tanked, slash was probably still hurt, slash who knows. And I eat a little bit there because I thought this was going to be Mathis this year. I thought with all this stuff gone, he was going to be the guy. He just wasn't talented. And that's kind of what I heard from former Temple coaches later is like, he just wasn't as good as everyone thought he was going to be or was should be or whatnot. So you have EJ Warner step in, have incredible games. Of course, he's Kurt Warner's son, makes sense. But as a freshman to take that on, it was very surprising to see him do so well.
Emily, I got to tell you what, I had EJ Warner too.
How could you not, right?
I had him specifically in the month of November too, when it felt like he got past this like hurdle and started to really take off offensively.
It was fun to watch.
All of a sudden, Temple was like clicking on offense, and that was, I thought, really cool.
It was neat. All right, last one is best and worst crowd this season.
All right.
So for my best crowd, I had to go Tulane. Mm-hmm. Even when, and especially when UCF was there, it was the best crowd I've seen in college football in a while because they were so fun, engaged, and all that stuff. And my worst one was Houston. Every time.
Same answers for both, to be honest with you. I had Tulane. I specifically gave Tulane's AAC championship crowd my nod.
Yeah,
I thought that they did a great
job. They did good.
The stadium and the crowd was great. The fan section was great.
And this is a hard category because you know you have Cincinnati who has a great home crowd. Yeah, ECU has a great home crowd. Memphis generally does a good job. So
crowd, you don't have to skip them. You don't have to skip them just because you know I'm going to say it.
Sorry, UCF is a good home crowd. They're often the ones that people say they like to play in. So
Navy's got a really good unique home crowd too. Let's don't overlook that. I also had Houston as the worst. I specifically picked out the Temple game because that's the one I sent you a photo of the stands that they're showing like at kickoff when there might have been a dozen people on them. And that Houston, the entire second half of the season, especially just had no one in the stadium. And it's like you're going to the Big 12 next year. I know this year was disappointing, but where is the fan support right now? That I know that team that packs it in the way Cincy or UCF does. But that was really disappointing to me. That
it was. It was. I liked how you texted me and you're like, I forget what you said about this. Oh, it looked like part of the scenery or the fans were blending into the stands because there were none.
They all dressed as stands for the game.
That was funny. It made me laugh. All right. Well, that's going to do it for our little all conference superlatives from the Underdog Dynasty podcast. We hope you guys enjoyed it. We hope you like the interview with Tyreek. We hope you'll follow him on social media. I'll tweet out his handles, but he's a really great kid and we think he's going to do good things at next level. Hopefully if someone takes a chance on the tight end from Waco, Texas. As always, you can follow me on social media at MLNEM, EMILNEM, Instagram and Twitter.
And you can find me on Twitter at Dan_Morrison96. And we're off.
We'll see you next time.